The ball is now back in the players' court as Major League Baseball owners presented their proposal on Monday to resume the season. The two sides still seem very far apart as they work out all these financials, but there is reason for optimism that there will, in fact, be a baseball season this summer.
Even as annoying and frustrating as the whole thing has been, it does seem like there's some possibility of progress.
That is Evan Drellick, who covers the business of baseball for The Athletic, and he joins us on today's show. I'm Seth Davis of The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. We'll get to Evan Drellick in a moment, but first, let's get you updated on what's happening around the world of sports. The NFL is preparing to open training camps next month. The Athletic's Lindsay Jones reports that the league has outlined safety protocols that will need to be in place for those camps to resume. One of those protocols requires lockers to be 6 feet apart. That's not going to be easy considering teams carry up to 90 players during camp. Also, meetings cannot have more than 20 people in the same room, and for teams that practice on artificial turf, the turf's going to have to be cleaned after every practice. The NFL might be considering starting training camp a little bit earlier since all of the off-season OTAs were wiped out earlier this year. In college sports, SEC programs have started voluntary strength and conditioning workouts. Several schools have already had some positive cases, namely Alabama, Auburn, Iowa, and Oklahoma State. The students who tested positive must complete a 2-week quarantine before they can work out again with their teammates. And we're getting a clear picture of the NBA's return to play plans. The Athletic's Shams Charania reports that under the current model, the regular season will begin on July the 31st, with the first round of the playoffs starting about 3 weeks later. Game one of the finals would begin around September the 30th. That's when teams normally begin training camp for next season, but of course, these are not exactly normal times. Now to the developments in Major League Baseball. The latest proposal came from the owners on Monday. They are offering a 76-game schedule in which the players would receive 75% of their prorated salaries for the regular season if the playoffs are completed, but only 50% if the postseason is canceled. We break it all down with The Athletic's Evan Drellick. Evan, thanks for being on the pod. So here's how your story today at The Athletic starts at U-Byline with Ken Rosenthal. Major League Baseball is increasingly likely to play in 2020, barring an uptick of COVID-19 cases that again forces the sport to shut down. My, that is optimistic. Thank you for the optimism, but please justify it for us.
You know, lost in all this, Seth, is that there is this March agreement that outlines how these sides would play. And in the absence of a new agreement, that's the thing they're trying to get to, both sides. They want a new agreement. But if they don't get to a new agreement, that March agreement still has precedence. It still rules the day. It'll set the format for the 2020 season. So is it a little possible that they wouldn't play if indeed no agreement came up? Yeah, I guess they could find some way to halt things, but the expectation all around here on both sides is that one way or another, they are going to play.
And so a potential scenario, a last resort scenario, if you will, is, correct me if I'm wrong, the owners can just basically say, okay, here's what we're going to do and implement it and go along based on pretty much those March terms and then let the players file a grievance later on. Is that kind of the ultimate end game for the owners?
Yeah, that's the threat at the moment. Cynically, or maybe even not cynically, there's some feeling that the owners will continue to make offers here to demonstrate that they're making a quote-unquote best effort. Because in that March agreement, it says that the commissioner's office has to make a best effort to play as many games as possible. So in granting that power to the league to set the schedule, it comes with that contingency. It's you can do what you want, but you have to try to play as many games as possible. And the hammer to some degree on the player's side is the fact that they did not give the power in that March agreement to an expanded playoff system. And that's something the league wants. It's something that could bring in more money at a time we know that money is particularly tight inside of the sport and everywhere. So the players can sit there and go, yeah, all right, go set your schedule, but guess what? You're not getting your extra postseason money.
So what would you say is the most significant concession the owners made here?
The union looked at the offer and said, we think this might actually be worse. The league says, that's crazy. We're offering you, in the end, more money. The number of games is similar, to the last offer. First offer is 82 games. This one is 76 games. The regular season money is similar as well. It's not identical, but basically $1 billion. The difference lies in the postseason money. So the league is saying, if we play a full postseason, you guys will make $400 million instead of about $200 million in the other deal. Those are rough numbers. It's a little more than $400 million. But the players don't want the risk of a postseason not coming. You know, this is not a revenue-sharing sport where those risks are typically normally divided. So the players are looking at the offer as simply a way of the league pushing off the risk of no postseason onto the players. And the players think, why should we go from this position we're in now where we don't have that risk to taking on that risk? What's the reason for that?
It's a little hard sometimes, Evan, to keep track of all these financial arguments. It seems to me, yes, and I'm glad you have to do it and I don't. I'll just ask you about it. But I mean, it seems to me that the owners are saying, you know, playing games actually hurts them financially because they're paying out salaries and they don't have fans in the stadium. But that's for the regular season. That this whole thing is really about that postseason money. Is that a basic breakdown of how the financial picture looks and what they're fighting over?
Yeah, that's fair. And certainly that's what the owners are projecting. There are some people who think that what they are saying publicly about their numbers are not accurate, that owners, in fact, would prefer, at the end of the day, to play as many games as possible, even without further pay reductions. But the public stance is, if we don't get pay reductions, then we need to have basically as short a regular season as possible and get to that playoff money because the national media money with the playoffs is indeed higher. It's in an 82-game season, the league projected it would be about $555 million in the regular season in national media money and $787 million in the playoffs. So you know, even that short period of time, the playoffs, it's still more money than the regular season. So To simplify it and say the postseason is the league's moneymaker is accurate.
I mean, I'm hearing reports and conjecture that we could end up with even fewer games, maybe like around 50 games for the regular season. Competitively, would you consider that legitimate?
There is something about the difference between 80 and 50 that feels lesser. Obviously, it's lesser, but from that competitive stance that spiritual sense in baseball where 82 to me, you go, yeah, that's long enough. And then 50, you go, that's really not a lot. I don't know where that line is. You know, if you said to me 65, where does that register on which side of the fence? You could debate that all day. You're going to have some people who look at that and say it's illegitimate. But to me, it always comes back to the alternative. If the only choice at the end of the day is no baseball or 50 games, I think once the sport is back, you're going to ultimately have people who are happy and excited. And on the other side of it, you can go, hey, every game's going to count at that clip at 50 games or so for a season. Think of the excitement you're injecting into every start. Every team is going to presumably hang in it for a while. I mean, the race to have any massive separation in a playoff race would be surprising, I guess, unless some team rolls out of the gate like 18-2. So, yeah, you'll have people who don't like it. I just tend to think that once the lights come on, it'll revert back to, oh, man, this is awesome. We got baseball back.
Well, it would certainly be better than nothing. But as part of this new proposal from the owners, they are talking about an acknowledgement of risk clause, which mm-hmm. is the owners basically saying, if anyone gets COVID-19, you can't sue us, even if we were negligent. It seems to me that that's going to be a tough one to hold up. Am I right?
Yeah, and the player stance thus far has been a hard line on that. And it's kind of to be determined how that plays out. The feeling was that the health protocols wouldn't really hold up the sport, that once they worked out the money, this side of it would come into place. Of all those health issues, this one might be the most contentious issue. It doesn't mean that testing and everything else is not important, but in terms of a stumbling block. And the league perspective is simply, look, if you're going to agree to play, you're agreeing to these health protocols, you can't then turn around and say we somehow failed you. And the players are going, well, you know, just because you agree to these doesn't mean you uphold them, doesn't mean you're necessarily going to implement them properly. So, you know, you can kind of see where both sides are coming from with it, but it's a serious issue. The ability to pursue, I guess, what you would consider malpractice, even if you're not going through a court, even if it's the kind of thing that would be heard by an arbitrator in baseball, as most every problem is inside the sport, it's still a significant recourse that the players do seem like they're going to fight for here.
I mean, with all this haggling back and forth about every dollar, I mean, we haven't heard much of anything about the logistics of all this. I mean, the NBA is sending everybody to one city. So that's a massive undertaking, but at least it sounds manageable. We don't know where these baseball games would be played, which stadiums are even available, what parts of the country. I mean, different parts of the country, the cases are going back up. Some are pretty much in line. I mean, that seems to be a monumental undertaking. Given the contentiousness of everything to this point, do you really have faith they can get all that figured out in time?
The feeling for probably now more than a month has been that most teams would be able to play without fans or maybe even with a small smattering of fans in their home stadium. And if there's indeed a market at this point that is not possible, that's not clear. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but there was a feeling that Toronto, because it's international, obviously, would be a difficult city that you might have to relocate the Blue Jays. And then there was all this contingency planning of, well, what do you do if a certain market is unplayable? And then the team would presumably go to its spring training home in Arizona or Florida. If the Reds all of a sudden tomorrow in Cincinnati couldn't play, you move them to Phoenix, where all those Arizona teams train. But yeah, the logistics, it's massive. It's the kind of thing that if it gets pulled off, or maybe even if it doesn't, it is worth a deeper dive from a reporting perspective, trying to understand all these moving parts. And it's centralized, but it's also not. I think there's a feeling that the different teams have to coordinate within their market as opposed to necessarily a single point person at MLB. But part of the thing that Rob Manfred has done is talk to governors. It is a head spinning number of moving parts.
So the projected start date for the season that we've been hearing all along was July 4th. Is that still a possibility at this point? And if not, how far back are we pushing it?
So there's no drop dead for the season, except once you hit a point where you can't play 50 or so games. July, at this point, though, you are losing days. So for every day you don't play, unless there's a change of heart about playing later into the fall, the owners don't want to play beyond October. They want to keep the World Series where it is. It's a fear of the pandemic coming back and also perhaps considerations for Fox and the national TV partners and their scheduling and all that. You're losing days. Could they play July 8th or July 15th at this point? Yes, probably. But July 4th seems to be all but gone because you need a 3 or 4 week spring training. So it's, every week that passes now would seem to be a week that will be lost off the season unless there is flexibility at the back end. And so far, there's no sign of that flexibility.
So what's the next step here?
The league requested, demanded, whatever you want to say, a response from the union to the latest offer by Wednesday. So sometime on Wednesday, presumably, we will get some news. What's the union going to do? Is it a counterproposal? Is it a simple rejection and tell the league to come back with something else? Those are the two most likely choices. If I had to handicap, I would bet they actually make a counterproposal so that the ball kind of keeps moving, if you want to consider the ball to be moving at all. But you look back to last week, there was a stance put forth by the league that they're not going to do anything, that they wouldn't send over another proposal. And then lo and behold, a week later, well, we've got a new proposal. So even as annoying and frustrating as the whole thing has been, and I know there are certainly some fans, if not most fans, who don't have the stomach for this, it does seem like there's some possibility of progress.
And amidst all this going on, we've got a draft on Wednesday, some piece of normal business. What's that going to be like?
Well, the strange thing about the draft is it's it's five rounds, and then you have all this intrigue after it. What prospects are willing to sign for a signing bonus of $20,000 or less, because the teams have the ability to sign an unlimited number of those guys. So, yeah, it's very odd for teams to have this few picks, but then in a way, the interesting part is really after it.
Well, a lot of interesting things happening, Evan. We promised we'd be after you to come back as you chronicle it all for The Athletic. We appreciate your work there, along with Ken Rosenthal and everybody else. And sounds like things are at least moving forward, which at this point is all we can ask for. Thanks for being on the show, and we look forward to having you back soon, hopefully with good news.
Thanks, Seth. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Evan for joining the show. This is The Comeback, presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.